You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mottis from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. I've been itching to get to this episode all weekend. This was a big one, and there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to go over. The team, the Denver Nuggets, they find themselves in an interesting position. And so there's a lot of good notes to get to. This episode of the show will be briefly, or I guess I should say a little bit, or using the loss to the Pelicans on Saturday night as a jumping off point to talk about a couple of different things. One, a good one. Denver's starting lineup is back, and it looks as good, and albeit in very, very, very limited minutes, it looks as good as I had imagined. Meanwhile, the bench unit for the Denver Nuggets, which has been now disrupted a little bit by the addition of Isaiah Thomas, looks bad. So there's kind of a tale of two stories, and that game against the Pelicans provides a nice backdrop for that. But before we get into it, I have to remind everybody, this Wednesday is our next watch party. Come out and join me, 8:30 at Stoney's Uptown there on 17th. A great bar, great atmosphere, great deal on wings. Drink special sponsored by Budweiser, so there's always great deals. It's just a good time. And then most of all, the Denver Nuggets take on the Los Angeles Lakers, and this could be a funeral. You might want to put on your black shirt and show up, because we might get to be the team that buries, just completely buries the Los Angeles Lakers. And so it could be a really fun night. I mean, for me, the Lakers missing the playoffs is almost as much fun as the Nuggets making the playoffs. So it could be a really, really, really fantastic night. Of course, the Lakers sort of buried Denver last year. They got a loss with just a couple weeks to go that really put Denver in a tight spot. Denver can return the favor this year, and oh, is it fun to return these types of favors. Karma! So come join me. Our watch parties are always fun. I love to interact and meet listeners of the show, readers of Denver Stiffs, and most of all Denver Nuggets fans. So come out, come say hi. If you see me there, the tall, devilishly good-looking guy, come out and say hi to me. All right, let's get into the notes, because there's an awful lot of them. So I mentioned it before, but Gary Harris reinserted back into the starting lineup, and it's so silly. Michael Malone, before the game, just mere hours, 2 hours before the game, was asked, you know, is Gary Harris back in the starting lineup? And he said no, but he will be at some point this week. Well, of course, that was just a smoke screen. He was back in the starting lineup, and this was big for Denver. This starting line, I just did an article on DenverStiffs.com that I highly encourage everybody that enjoys this show. I promise you will enjoy the article. You have to read, so you don't just have to sit there and listen. You actually have to read, but there's some graphics and stuff to make it easy, some video as well to kind of highlight the stuff I'm talking about. Might be my favorite X's and O's piece I've done so far, and I hope it gets you excited for this Denver Nuggets team, because I just think the starting lineup, I've said it all year, even before they stepped on the court together, this starting lineup is the reason I am so high on this Denver Nuggets team, and it's wild that they have gotten as far as they have without it. In fact, the team has only, this was only the third game all season that five had started a game together. I think it's only the seventh time or sixth time that they've been healthy at the same time. So there's a lot of interesting stuff in there that I think you'll enjoy. But you saw it in this game. It looked as good, if not better, than I had imagined. Actually, I would say better, because the five-man unit now has, I think, 69 minutes. They've outscored opponents by 55 points in those 69 minutes, including in the first quarter here. I don't think they can keep that pace, but, you know, any team, not every lineup is capable of going on the type of runs that lineup has, even in the limited minutes they've played. They had five assists on the first six possessions in this game. To say the ball was popping was an understatement. This was Jokic ball, as good as we have seen it in the Jokic era. I mean, this team was firing on all cylinders to open this game. Nine assists on the first 12 buckets in this game. So for reference, Denver is one of the best passing teams in the NBA. I think second in assists per 100 possessions. And, you know, it's rare for them to get over the 30 assist mark. Nine assists in 10 minutes, you're on pace for 40 assists. So to jump over 25 is great. To jump over 40 would be unheard of. So for the pace that the Nuggets were on to open this game was just absolutely ridiculous. 35-22. to start this game in the first 10 minutes, and they were making it look easy. Will Barton had 6 points. Barton, by the way, in that five-man line, I defend him so much on here, but here's another. I keep finding new stats that I think fans will like, and I think they'll kind of, especially as we start to talk about Isaiah Thomas, I think you'll realize there's always a scapegoat. There's always one guy, and with Barton, when that five plays together, Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Will Barton, Paul Millsap, and Nikola Jokic, Jokic's usage rate is something like 30. Gary Harris's usage rate is something like 22, 23. Jamal Murray's usage rate like 22, 23. Will Barton has the fourth highest at like 16. Paul Millsap at like 16 or 15. So Millsap and Barton in that lineup, they know their role. They know their ranking on the pecking order. And Barton in particular becomes such a better passer and facilitator and playmaker that, you know, the proof is in the pudding. It's in the numbers. When he shares the court with that lineup, he is the perfect missing piece to facilitate and take a backseat role. So, and we saw it in this first quarter. Barton had 6 points. Millsap had 5 points. Jokic had 4 points. Harris had 3 points. Jamal had 10 points. Everybody had, it was like an even distribution of points. And then Plumlee, Beasley, and Monte each had a bucket. So you play 8 guys in that first 10 minutes. Actually, you played 9. Wancho only played a minute, and he did not score in that first minute. But of the 8 guys that actually played real minutes, they all scored. And that's Nuggets basketball. It's unpredictable. It's free-flowing. It's balanced. And it's just guys reading each other. And that's what you got in the first 10 minutes of this game. And that's why Denver was on pace for 160 points. They had 35 points in 10 minutes. So the ball was popping in this, and it was really great to see. It looked exactly as good as I thought this lineup could look. We'll get back to more game notes here in just a moment. But before we do, I want to tell you about the sponsor of today's show, Realtor Ryan. If you are looking, now is the time. We're almost at the spring break time of year. You wouldn't know it from looking at the snow, but this is a great time now to start thinking about buying your first home. Or if you're in a home already, maybe you want to think about upgrading and finding your more permanent home, maybe your dream home, maybe upgrading and moving to that neighborhood you want. If you got kids looking to start school, you want to get in the right school district, now is your time. And fortunately, you have my guy, Realtor Ryan Dykstra of Ion Real Estate to call, 303-217-1533. That's the number you want to call or text if you're more comfortable texting, and Realtor Ryan can walk you through whatever questions you have about the Denver real estate market. He's a diehard Denver Nuggets fan, been a season ticket holder for 10 years. He's been in real estate for 10 years, and he's a Denver native, so he knows this market inside and out. Whether you're looking to buy in Highlands Ranch, Broomfield, or anywhere in between, Realtor Ryan is your guy. He's got plenty of experience, and he's got a lot of tools to help you sell your home for the best value or find a home that's your dream home. So give him a call, 303-217-1533. Support the people who support this show. And he's a longtime listener, diehard Nuggets fan. A lot of you have met him at the last meeting, the live show. You have a chance to meet him again on Wednesday at the Denver Nuggets watch party. So come on out, chat with him, learn about the Denver real estate market if you've got questions, and use him as a resource because he's a great guy with a lot of experience. And of course, he's a supporter of this show. The only hitch that you could point to in this game in that first quarter was that Jokic got into foul trouble, and it was a combination of some pretty soft fouls. I mean, his second and third fouls, I think in particular, were very questionable. You could, you know, ticky-tack, all-stars, superstars don't tend to get those type of calls, especially 2, let alone 3 in the same game. So Jokic was, you know, he was getting a tough whistle. I don't think you could say it was like, the third foul, I think, was just not a foul. The second and fourth ones were, you know, the type of fouls that get called maybe 1 out of every 5 times, certainly not back-to-back. So it was tough. Jokic was getting a tough whistle. Michael Malone, I think he is probably going to want to get a fine right before the season. I know he doesn't ever want to pay. I mean, Josh Kroenke, honestly, should take him out, maybe try to reimburse him some of that money under the table or something. But Michael Malone, going into a playoffs, they're going to need Jokic to get called the same way an Anthony Davis gets called or a Joel Embiid or these guys that live at the line. I don't know what he's going to have to do to start getting foul calls, but Michael Malone is probably going to have to pay some serious money to bring it to the attention. And I hope he's, you know, I'll write the script for him. If he needs some help, I'm a writer. I will write exactly what to say to sort of make the biggest impact. He needs to think about how he's going to attack the refs in this final. I don't think he can do it now. It's too early. But a week or two before the season, I think he needs to go on an all-time rant, you know, a take that for data type rant. They are not going to rook us type rant. He needs to have one of those because it's going to, if he does it right, it's going to form the conversation for how this, that series is going to be talked about. So Michael Malone probably has that in his back pocket. But, you know, it also starts with Jokic's body language, which we've talked about a lot on the show, and it's gotten slightly better, I think, over the years, especially over the last year and a half or so. But, you know, he can improve by improving his body language and his reaction just to the refs. He yells at the refs too much. He needs to, whether it's fatigue, whatever it is, whether it's fatigue or refining his focus, improving his body, improving his temper. Maybe he needs to see a Buddhist or a monk, spend a month in a monastery this summer. Whatever it is, he has got to sort of learn how to work officials, because right now he does the opposite of working officials. And I'm not saying it gives the officials an out to sort of ref him poorly, like I think that, to be quite frank, I think that they have throughout his career. But he has to understand that Denver is not the same without him. He is the engine. And you know, this team is not going to go very far without him in the regular season and in the postseason. But Denver started to struggle in the second. Don't worry, I'm going to get to IT. So some of these notes, I want to go over everything else, and then we're going to spend a large portion on IT. But Denver started to struggle in the second. They got outscored 40-32. Now, you know, we are going to talk about IT, but I want to talk about all these other things because I don't want people to reduce this to, oh, it's a simple thing. That's the scapegoat. You know, there could be one piece or one thing that is killing the team, but there's all these other things that we want to talk about. And Mason Plumlee, after the game, he said, and I agree with him, that this team, when they're scoring as easily as they were in this game in that first quarter, they tend to lose focus defensively because I just think mentally, it's human nature to think, okay, that was so easy, it's always going to be easy. So, you know, defensively, we can wind down to 80%, not 100%. Let's go down to 80%. And it's a bad habit. You know, we've talked about Denver being complacent and playing to the level of their competition. If they're playing the Atlanta Hawks, they tend to play at one pace. And if they play the Golden State Warriors, they tend to play at another one. So I think it can happen within the course of a game. In the first quarter, their in effort and energy and focus and just will to win, I thought was at an all-time high. In the second, third, and especially as the game went on and they started to lose hold of the rope, their will to win, I thought, decreased, and their focus and all that stuff decreased. So Plumlee had a great point. What he didn't have was, great decision makings. He too got into foul trouble and picked up his fourth foul, including three in the second quarter. And when Jokic was out and Plumlee was out, and you're already talking about a Nuggets lineup that does not have a true backup power forward. They have stretch power forward options, but especially with Trey Lyles out, you don't have a reliable one there. You know, that really put Denver in a bind. They're already trying to play these three-guard lineups and smaller lineups. So for Plumlee to get in trouble, I thought it really hurt Denver. And it should be noted, Julius Randle in particular is a Nuggets killer. He's a head-down, just attack the basket type guy, and Denver tends to struggle with those types because their bigs are skilled bigs, not necessarily guys that can keep up with that level of strength and speed. So Randle a handful, and he killed Denver in this one. In the third quarter, Jokic dominated the opening 3 minutes. Jokic was actually dominant every second that he was on the court. The problem with him was availability, and of course, that's the most important thing. How good are you if you dominate 20 minutes if you can't play 25? If Jokic played 25 minutes in this game, Denver wins. If he played 35 minutes, like, you know, he probably will most nights he's healthy, Denver wins by 46 points. I mean, that's how dominant he was. In the third quarter, so he scores 4 points and grabs 2 assists in 3 minutes, and it looked like Denver was going to build another lead, but then another foul, his fourth this time, and perhaps the softest one, and this was a killer because now you're 3 minutes in, you've just gained a little bit more momentum back, and now you have to switch everything back out. Isaiah Thomas checked back into the game with 2 minutes to go. So the rest of the third quarter was just Denver getting hammered and just losing all of their momentum and eventually coughing up the lead in that quarter. Isaiah Thomas checked in with 2 minutes to go, and it felt like this was the game. It felt like the game was in balance. You knew Jokic would come back in the fourth. You knew that maybe Denver could regroup, but down five and with 2 minutes to go, and now this new player, Isaiah Thomas, this new guy, you didn't know what to expect. Denver had blown a 19-point lead, and it felt like if Denver can make maybe that's a home run swing, and Isaiah Thomas goes off, and Denver re-gets a little momentum, and then Jokic will check in the fourth and carry him home. Or it felt like Isaiah Thomas could completely blow it. Neither really happened, but Denver certainly didn't grab momentum, which was something that they needed to do. In the fourth quarter, Jokic played all 12 minutes of the fourth. He grabbed 12 points, 7 rebounds in that quarter alone, only had 1 assist. He probably should have had 5 assists. Gary Harris could knock down. He had 2 wide-open corner 3-pointers, 1 in each corner. He missed both. Juancho Hernangómez continues to not just miss, but miss badly. Malik Beasley had a couple layups that he blew. So Jokic, in that quarter alone, probably could have had 12, 7, and 5 if guys just hit their open shots. And unfortunately, it didn't work out. The whole team was just shook. And again, one of the things you can take away from this, the post-mortem on this game, was that Jokic picked up some soft but silly fouls and the team never recovered. But also, so that to me, the mental toughness, and it was funny, Scott Hastings and Chris Marlowe on the broadcast were talking about this very thing of, Denver, if they're a great playoff team, then no matter, bad things can happen against bad teams, and the Pelicans, especially without Anthony Davis, are a bad team. Bad things can happen and you still win. You still find a way to win at home, and Denver had opportunities to win this game, even with how many things just, it seemed like karma or whatever, the basketball gods were not in their favor in this game, but Denver still could have overcome that. They've overcome so many of these types of moments this season, but they didn't in this one. But also on the post-mortem report is that for the fourth straight game and 4 out of 6 times, Isaiah Thomas continued to not just look bad, but to continue to look like a player that disrupts what the Nuggets are not only trying to do, but what they are best at. By my count, Isaiah Thomas has looked good in one game. He's looked okay in one game, and he's looked bad, various levels of bad, in 4 games. And I want to take you back, first of all, to when I first heard the news. I was in Summer League, along with several other writers, when I saw the news come across my feed that Isaiah Thomas would be joining the Denver Nuggets. And, myself, along with several other, of the Denver Nuggets writers, we spent the evening when we first heard that news kind of kicking around every angle. And I'd be lying if I didn't tell you that a majority, if not all of us, sort of settled on the belief and the opinion that this had a lot more downside than it did upside. And, wanted to keep an open mind, and there's always more that you don't know than what you do, and all this different stuff. But, the risks of adding a player of not just of his caliber, but the type of player that he is, and given the injury history and all that, there was a lot of risk here. And you have to keep in mind, Tim Connelly had handed Michael Malone Emmanuel Mudiay his first season here with Denver, and Jameer Nelson. He soon gave him Mudiay and Jamal Murray. And you think about it, the point guard position is the most important position in basketball. And while Conley had handed Malone a great roster, and I think Josh Kroenke had handed Malone a long leash and said, look, our expectations are realistic looking at a 3- and 4-year window. So I think Malone was starting, he was in a position to sort of handle that. But when you're trying to win in the NBA and you give somebody a 19 and a 20-year-old point guard with almost no experience, it is almost impossible to win. So I got the sense that Malone probably wanted a veteran point guard this season. This was the season that there were expectations. Last year, the team said it was not playoffs or bust, especially given Paul Millsap's injury. But this year it was, and you knew that their heads would roll and there would be problems if the Nuggets failed to make the playoffs. So coming into the season, the idea of saying Jamal Murray, who was coming off of a sophomore season that had promise, but he still was far from a certain thing, and then saying Monte Morris, who had played 5 minutes in the NBA prior to that, even though Monte was having a phenomenal summer league, I understand the impulse to say, you know what, this is the year we got to give him a veteran. And Isaiah Thomas, the price was right, a veteran minimum, there's almost no risk, and all these different things. But for starters, Monte Morris is incredible. And You know, I'd be lying if I said I didn't feel this way at Summer League, and it's easy for me to say. Look, I wrote on this even at the time. Monte Morris looked in Summer League not like a Summer League standout, but like an NBA standout, because he wasn't winning with athleticism or hot shooting or this or that. He was doing well in Summer League because he looked like the smartest player on the court, and he had that assist-to-turnover ratio that was consistent with what he did in college. So he looked like he was going to play, if not as well as he has this season, he looked like he was going to be a reliable backup point guard. So there was always that. Isaiah seems to inherently force the Nuggets to choose between him and Monte. I'm not sure if both can play. And if both do play, then what does that mean for Malik Beasley? So it seems that there's this inherent idea that Isaiah Thomas playing with the Nuggets would cause some player that Denver likes to be out of the rotation. And if you didn't know this coming into summer, you know, coming out of Summer League, you certainly knew it in January and February before the trade deadline. And if you listen to the show for long enough, you know I kept thinking that Isaiah Thomas would be traded at the trade deadline. I thought that was probably the safest and healthiest, or just released before the buyout period ended. And you could release him, and maybe a team like Miami or somebody else would pick him up and take a flyer on him. So as much as it would hurt to sort of eat a contract or whatever, it would be more damaging to have a player on your roster that could really disrupt things. So as the season went on, I started to think it was more and more likely that IT would just never play and not play for the Nuggets. So first of all, Isaiah Thomas does not look like his old self. That needs to be said here. Maybe things would be different, although I'm going to argue probably not. But maybe things would be different if Isaiah Thomas looked like he did when he was with Boston, or even 90% of that. But he doesn't. He's not getting to the rim. He isn't beating his man off the dribble. He's not creating separation and pick and roll. And if he can't do that, we know that he can't play very good defense. Denver is going to have to, you know, cover for him on defense. And Denver can play good defense. I think they're still a top 10 defense, but they have to play near perfect. They're not one of these teams that defense comes effortlessly to them. Denver's good defensively when they buy in, and they can be great defensively when they buy in. But you hand a player like Isaiah Thomas, who just because of his physical limitations, I don't believe can be a good defender. He's too short. He's too little, and he's just not, you know, strong or quick enough to be able to, like, go in there and rebound or do some of the other things that are underrated aspect of defense, cover, you know, contest shots or whatever. When he runs out at a guy at the three-point line, it makes almost no difference because he just can't get high enough to contest. So we knew that Denver defensively was going to be worse with him. And then just how much better, you know, can they be offensively? Integrating a new player can always cause a shock to the system. So another question that you have to – fans have it easy. Fans get to have knee-jerk reactions all of the time, and sometimes they're right. Sometimes what happens in the first six games of an experiment is what's going to happen forever with that lineup. Sometimes what happens in the first six games isn't. A great example of this is the Jokic-Plumlee lineup. They went several weeks, almost 2 months, with that lineup not looking good at all. Then all of a sudden they figured it out, and the rest is history. Now 2.5 years later, and that's one of Denver's best duos. So sometimes the knee-jerk reaction prevents you from realizing something that's better. But I don't think that's the case with what's going on. Sometimes there's tension about how to fit in and how to stand out, and sometimes those answers get those questions get answered, and sometimes they do not. So I highly doubt that it's the case that Isaiah Thomas is going to turn it on one game here, or it's going to get his groove and slowly get better. And the reason isn't necessarily because I think he's got like another gear in him. I think he does. I think he can be better. It's more about he can be better in ways that Denver doesn't necessarily need. And that's the ultimate story, I think, with him. And then when you throw in the fact that he also looks bad, it's a double whammy. Denver's offense is already elite. How much better can it get with a guy? Denver's clutch time performance is already elite. So how much more do you need that clutch player? And oh, by the way, are you really going to play Isaiah Thomas in clutch minutes and bench one of Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, or Will Barton? I really don't think so. Denver also just has too many guards. Murray, Harris, Barton, Beasley, and Monte are all great rotation pieces. Not good, but great rotation pieces. So which one of those guys gets fewer minutes or no minutes because of minutes for Isaiah Thomas? That's what we're up against, I think, here with IT. So my strong hunch, and this is why I'm always careful with my takes, is We all have bias. When you go into a situation with a perspective, it's very hard, very hard. One of the hardest things I think to do in life, to change your perspective, you know, when you're so ingrained in something. And I came into this case, this situation thinking, you know, I don't think this makes sense to me. I don't think it's going to work. So the fact that it hasn't, you know, you never want to be caught with confirmation bias, especially on a small sample size. So my hunch is that, so I say all that, but I also want to say that my hunch is that IT almost certainly not going to work out. And my hunch is that we're not seeing an adjustment period. This is as good as it's going to get, save for maybe a couple of hot shooting nights, because IT is the type of player that could go off for 30 points in 20 minutes if he got hot. So maybe we get one or two of those, and maybe it wins you a game. Maybe at Golden State here in a couple games, Isaiah Thomas goes for 35 points and Denver beats the Warriors. Sometimes that happens. But I think on the aggregate, when you look at the last 20 games of the season, I think he will be a net negative for the majority, if not all of the games that he will play. And then lastly, it's my belief that at some point this season, the team will have to decide to remove Isaiah Thomas from the rotation. I think it's coming. I don't know that's going to be one of those things where it's, oh, well, it's situational. Some games he will, some games he won't. I think it'll be more like with Torrey Craig, how it's been, where it's not necessarily, maybe it's situational that he'll get a minute here or there, but when everybody's healthy, he's largely just out of the rotation. So that's how I think it's headed. But there's probably other dynamics at play. And I say probably here because I don't know. I don't have inside information on this. It's not the type of thing I could poke around and somebody would share. Isaiah Thomas chose Denver. And Denver chose Isaiah Thomas. There was this mutual decision to go out and pursue him. And you have to understand that this is a very important season for Isaiah Thomas. He needs to get paid. He has been on the wrong end of some raw deals in the course of his career. He is an unlucky player in a lot of ways in that he just has not made as much money as he probably has earned over the course of his career. Now, that's not Denver's fault, but Isaiah Thomas took a chance on Denver, and Denver took a chance on Isaiah over the summer. And I think that, again, this is just my hunch here, but I think that Denver probably, while they don't care about that, but they do care about the optics of how they handle it. And in my opinion, I think they probably want to give him a reasonable opportunity to get healthy and a reasonable opportunity to play. If Kevin Durant was on the Nuggets and he had missed 11 months and Kevin Durant came in and he put up the same numbers Isaiah Thomas has so far, you would assume it's just rust. We know Kevin Durant's a great player, and to what he's given so far has not been that good. So Denver, when you talk about Isaiah Thomas, well, he hasn't been good through six games. Part of this is it's not that surprising. It probably was always going to take a lot more than that. We saw Will Barton miss just, you know, 2 months basically, and it took him 15 games to get back, and now he's playing a lot better. So is the same true for Isaiah Thomas? I think if you're Isaiah Thomas, you certainly feel like that's a reasonable expectation. So Denver maybe feels like it. They have a chance, but I think they probably only want to give him, and again, this is my opinion, 3, maybe 4, maybe 5 at most, more games to, A, fit in, because part of the problem is just that it's not that he hasn't played well, but he hasn't fit into the style of play, and Malone has referenced this. And then B, to start playing better. With the Spurs, Lakers, and Warriors on the schedule, it might be that it costs Denver a 5-game losing streak. This is, you know, Denver's already on a 2-game losing streak, and again, that's not all Isaiah's fault. Denver still could have won in spite of Isaiah playing not that great in this last one. They still should have won. But they're on a 2-game losing streak, and they have 3 very tough road games. But I think my opinion is that some point now or in the very new future, Michael Malone will have to make a very difficult decision. And the locker room might suffer a brief shock whenever he does. One crazy note here, by the way. Isaiah Thomas is leading the team. Through 6 games, he is leading the team in shots per 36 minutes. 3 more than every other player. So if you look at the Nuggets per 36 minutes on the season, Isaiah Thomas is taking 20 shots. Jokic is taking 17.5. Murray's taking 17. Trey Lyles is taking 16. I mean, he tends to shoot a lot as well. Gary Harris, 15. Isaiah Thomas, 20. So 2.5 more shots per 36 minutes than Jokic. 3.5 more than Murray. It's absolutely insane. So at some point, I think You know, Malone might have to make that very, and I hope you guys appreciate how difficult of a pickle Malone will find himself in, because somebody's not going to be happy, and this great chemistry in an all-time locker room might see a shock to the system. This is a test. I've talked about this before. A happy locker room is not happy forever. That there's a moment in time, and these things can turn on a dime. We're seeing it with the Boston Celtics this year. Last year, sunshine and rainbows. This year, not so much. Denver can have a shock to the system, but I also think this is an opportunity, and it might come at Isaiah Thomas's expense. This could be an opportunity for Malone to send a very strong message to the rest of the locker room, if he has the gravitas to sort of tell IT that the team is more important. So if it comes to a head, and look, they might need, you know, Monte Morris might roll an ankle. They might need to find a way to bench Isaiah Thomas while still having him buy in, so that if his name gets called, he can be the next man up and always stay ready. You always hear this with young guys. Oh, I just had to stay ready, and my opportunity came. I was ready for it. Well, Isaiah Thomas, he wants his opportunity to be now, but the Nuggets need him to be ready if his opportunity comes down the line. So I don't think the casual fan understands how difficult these decisions are and how much they can have ripple effects. But I think at the end of the day, Denver has lineups right now that just make a lot more sense. And with 20 games to go, Denver is about, they're nearing the point where you would like them to kind of zero in and make a run to close out the season. The seeding doesn't make as much. I know a lot of people think, well, you don't want to give up the 2 seed. I'll be honest, guys. It doesn't matter as much to me. And I know that's silly. I know Denver at home is so much better than Denver on the road. And if they get the 3 seed and end up having to go to Oklahoma City or Utah or Portland, those are tough places to play, and their odds of winning that series go down. But, you know, I look at it both a little bit more long term and a little bit more of from this perspective. I truly believe in this Denver Nuggets team. I think they're better than what most people realize, even their most big, their most vocal supporters, because as I mentioned at the top of this, that starting lineup is absolutely absurd. It is the perfect or near perfect lineup to put around Nikola Jokic. One of the best. He is averaging, if you just took his per game, he plays 31 minutes per game on average this season. If you took just the minutes he has played in that lineup and extended him for 31 minutes per game, he'd be averaging 30, 10, and 8. 30 points per game on 80% true shooting. He is absolutely dominant. And you look at this game, just the other night, he plays 20 minutes and scores 20 points in 21 minutes, 29 and 7 in 21 minutes. This Nuggets team, and especially now that they have Gary Harris, Will Barton, Jamal Murray, Paul Millsap healthy, they have a five-man lineup that I truly believe is the next death lineup in the NBA. That's really what I believe. It's the next death lineup. And oh, by the way, Monte Morris, Malik Beasley, Trey Lyles, and Mason Plumlee, when those four on the court together, they're one of the best benches in the NBA. So this is a shock to the system. Denver might extend for another 3, 4, 5, maybe even 7, 8 games. And if it goes that long, I think all Nuggets fans, myself included, are going to be pulling our hair out. But I do think that at some point in the very, very, very near future, we're going to see the most ideal version of this Denver Nuggets roster, and it's going to close out the year, and it's going to enter the postseason. And that's why I am a little less panicked than everyone else about this. The Denver Nuggets that I believe exist with the roster that they have is a team that can go into Utah and win, can go into Portland and win, and can go into OKC and win, and can go into Golden State and at least put up a respectable effort, which is all you can ask for against this ridiculous Golden State team. I think the Nuggets are very, very close to unlocking the best version that we've seen of them in the Michael Malone era, and quite possibly the best version we've seen of them in any era. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. I'll be back again tomorrow with a recap episode of Denver as they are in San Antonio to take on the Spurs. We'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.